Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
In September, my friend Donald said that he had had his lawyers look at this from every which way. And there was no issue there. There was nothing to this birther issue. Now, since September, the Constitution hasn't changed. But the poll numbers have.
She did say there was anger. And I could say, oh, I'm not angry. I'm very angry. Because our country is being run horribly. And I will gladly accept the mantle of anger.
I saw you on the Senate floor flip your vote on crop insurance because they told you it would help you in Iowa. And last week we all saw you flip your vote on ethanol in Iowa for the same reason. That is not consistent conservatism. That is political calculation.
Just some of the voices from last night's GOP presidential debate, the first of 2016. People are saying that this was a good, healthy debate, that some of the candidates who had formerly kind of been outshone by Donald Trump got a chance to say a few things. And by and large, I think it was a favorable reception to this stage of the presidential debate in the Republican Party. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, January the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to analyze the first GOP presidential debate of 2016 with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist, here in the first 15 minutes or so of the program. A little bit later on this Friday afternoon, part 8 of our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation today, Luther's writings on good works and to the Christian nobility of the German nation. This is where Luther starts to put pen to paper and actually apply some of the things that he has been learning from Scripture. Dr. Ken Sherb will be our guest. After that, George Conger, senior editor at Anglican Inc., joins us. We're going to talk about sanctions that have been leveled by the Worldwide Anglican Communion against the U.S. Episcopal Church. A long time coming. This is a very difficult decision that they came to. What does it mean, and does it really represent a schism in the Anglican Communion or recognize one? George Conger will answer some of those questions. Then it's Friday afternoon, so we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We got 4 sound bites to play for you. We will play them. Then it's your turn to vote and pick which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We'll give away the LPR bundle package to the listener with the best vote for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, or sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Go right now to our Issues Etc. Facebook fan page. We've left space there for you to vote for soundbite of the week, facebook.com/issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She is senior editor of The Federalist. She joins us to talk about the GOP presidential debate, the first of 2016. She's author of a recent column titled 7 Quick Takeaways from the First GOP Debate of 2016. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
First of all, you mentioned a couple times in your recent write-up on the debate, and I want to know why you think that Fiorina and Paul, it's time for them to move up to the main stage of the debate, and if so, who they would replace.
Yeah, so the debate that was held this week was a bit smaller in size, and certain candidates were pushed down, and there's a lot of debate about different polls which show some candidates up and some candidates down. John Kasich isn't doing that well nationally, but he's doing all right in New Hampshire, so he gets to be on the main stage. And meanwhile, candidates like Rand Paul and Carly Fiorina, who have pretty sizable levels of support nationwide, didn't make the cutoff. But what was really interesting, and the debate night this week was interesting, but it could have been better if Paul and Fiorina had been on the main stage. And that's because Senator Rand Paul provides a much different perspective and a much needed different perspective on foreign policy debates and how we engage in wars and how we see our role internationally. And Carly Fiorina is just a very effective debater who clarifies issues and makes a strong case philosophically for conservatism. They, in a sense, almost bring out the best in the other candidates because of how they clarify some of these issues. And so their absence was really noticeable. Having said that, it was a good debate.
Okay, let's go through the main stage candidates one at a time, beginning with Ted Cruz.
So Ted Cruz had far and away the most difficult challenge last night in that he was heading into the debate with quite a bit going against him. Donald Trump is very worried about how well Ted Cruz is doing in Iowa, so he's been starting to do these birther claims where he says Ted Cruz isn't eligible to run for president, and this would be maybe outlandish if another candidate did it, but with Donald Trump, it works really well. So he had to answer that challenge. And then also this week, Ted Cruz got in a bit of trouble from his message testing where he was trying to figure out things he could say against Donald Trump, and one of the things he said was that he had New York values. And our media are very New York-centric, and so when they got wind of that, they just thought that was unacceptable. So he had to answer both of those charges, and he did very well with both of them. Unfortunately for him, his strength was in the first part of the debate, and he kind of sputtered after that.
Then let's talk a little bit about the one upon whom most, if not all, the attention in the previous debates has been lavished, and that's Donald Trump.
Yeah, so the one thing that's interesting is when Cruz went after him early in the debate, I have never seen Trump put on his heels like Cruz was able to get him. He was really flailing to explain why he was coming up with this birther stuff, and he admitted that he was just doing it because of how well Cruz is performing in the polls. Then he tried to make a legal argument. Ted Cruz has argued cases before the Supreme Court, and he responded quite effectively to that. So it was interesting that at the first part of the debate, it seems like maybe finally Trump was having a bad debate performance. The media always think he's going to have a bad debate performance, but he usually does pretty well. And this last night was no exception. He was actually eloquent, and he was able to get the media on his side when he made this valiant defense of New York values tied around recovery from the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He was quite effective, and he also toned down his rhetoric quite a bit during the debate, something he did also during the previous debate. And I think that works well for him. He gets a little bit lower energy than you see at his rallies, and so he comes off seeming more sensible than you've been led to believe he is.
And that's kind of important at this point, because he is actually being challenged in those key states, the initial states of the primaries, to some degree, isn't he?
Well, he is. It's interesting, though. He's always been a front runner, but he's never been quite treated as the front runner so much as a spectacle. So the media give him tons of coverage, but nobody has seemed willing to come to terms with the reality that he has held his lead for month after month after month. And we're heading into some debates. He's doing pretty well in Iowa. Everyone says that his caucus goers won't actually show up because going to a caucus is a somewhat difficult process, so they might not know how to do it or how to do it well. And so that's certainly possible. Maybe he won't perform very well in Iowa. On the other hand, maybe he will surprise everybody and overperform expectations. And then he's also doing very well in New Hampshire. If he wins both of those states, I think it's pretty much over, and he will be able to secure the nomination.
Marco Rubio is one of those guys that so many people like, but he has a hard time translating that in events like this. How did he do last night?
Right. Marco Rubio has been everybody's first or second favorite candidate for many months. People generally like him. He does have some support, but he hasn't been able to break out. That more moderate Republican, even though he's quite conservative, that more moderate Republican group, they're dividing their votes between Christie and Bush and Rubio. They understand that they need to have a candidate who's more conservative this year, so I think they're very interested in Rubio. He still knows how to play along well with donors and the establishment. But he hasn't been able to break out. So last night, he got fiery. I mean, he absolutely went to town. He attacked Chris Christie, and he very effectively attacked Ted Cruz as a flip-flopper. I don't know if that will actually help him break out or not, but he certainly landed some punches.
Jeb Bush, does he still belong on that stage?
It's like a morality tale come to life. He is probably, I don't understand why he's running, just because, unfortunately, because of who his father and who his brother are. I just don't think that he has any chance of securing the nomination this year. And if he did, he would not have a chance of winning the eventual race. Having said that, he's a horrible candidate. I mean, he's inarticulate. He has wasted money. He doesn't have a good strategy. It's just a disaster. But he actually probably would make a good president. And so it's horrible to watch this scene where you have the loudest voices saying the craziest things and people cheering and rallying behind people who say increasingly crazy things. And then you have Jeb Bush, who actually seems to have a clear foreign policy vision that actually might have some success, and he's just going nowhere. It's frustrating. He had a good debate. It just doesn't matter because a good debate for Jeb Bush is nowhere near sufficient for what he needs to do to win the nomination.
And you say that Chris Christie kind of is the opposite of George Bush, at least in the terms of kind of candidate and then performance.
Yeah, he's a really good campaigner. He's a very good candidate, but the problem is he has done things politically that will make it very difficult for him to win a nomination. And last night, Rubio went after him as a liberal, and Chris Christie said that's not true. And Rubio just started listing off things about how Governor Christie has endorsed many of the ideas that Barack Obama supports, whether it's Common Core or gun control, or even supporting Sonia Sotomayor or the donation he made to Planned Parenthood. Christie immediately denied all this, and it was very easy for the media to go back, you know, in old newspaper reports and look at every single thing he'd said about Sonia Sotomayor, where he said he supported her, where he claimed to make a donation to Planned Parenthood. He now says he was misquoted by his support for gun control and whatnot, where he at one point had said that that's why he got into politics, was for gun control. So his own record is going to hurt him, even if he was charming on the debate stage. His opening line about how the State of the Union seemed like it was story time with Barack Obama, where everything sounded like where everything in the world was going amazing. It was a great opener, but yeah, he's got baggage too.
Is that part of the problem of trying to run as a moderate? And he's genuinely a moderate in a presidential race on a national level. Well, everybody at certain points has to tack right.
Well, it's interesting because I think in another year he might have been able to bridge this divide purely because of how good he is as a retail politician. He is delightful to watch on stage. Everyone loves watching him beat up on the media and just play with him in the same way that they like watching how Donald Trump can control the media. He has these skills that might have enabled him to overcome his liberal political record in any other cycle, but not just Republican voters, but I think voters in general are just done with this moderate, keep doing things the same way and expecting different results, only to pad the pockets of our politicians who are in bed with corporations. I mean, he's just kind of in that same pattern. So I think it's just a bad year for him.
And again, you say that Kasich and Carson didn't belong there last night. Do they really even belong on the second tier stage anymore?
My own view is that Carson is done, that he squandered some very serious grassroots support by not being serious about running a campaign. I mean, Donald Trump, everyone has been joking about him, but he knew how to hire effective people in each state. He has utilized his gifts well. He has, you know, he figured out he could work the media. He works the media. And he has consistently increased in the polls over time. Whereas Carson had some of the most goodwill you could imagine. He had all this support. He didn't know how to actually work with his voters or how to even, you know, just be prepared for these debates, which are important for voters making decisions. As for Kasich, I think it's another situation where this is not his year. He's doing all right in New Hampshire, which would be a much more liberal Republican state. I don't think he has a path to victory, and he is just horrible to listen to during the debates. He just drones on and doesn't really say anything. He doesn't get the electoral mood of the moment, and it's just shameful. You know, Trump, Cruz, and Rubio were really interesting to listen to. And when you look back on the debate, it just kind of seemed like their debate. I do think Fiorina and Rand Paul would have added something to those discussions, but Kasich didn't add anything.
Two final questions for you, Molly. First of all, what will it take to bust the Trump bubble?
Well, if someone can figure that out, that would be huge news. I don't know if it's possible. He is so effective. Going after him only increases his votes. Not going after him increases his votes. His voters don't seem to care whether he lies. You know, there are all these things he said that were not true, I should say. I don't know what his motivation was, whether it was about factory building in China, or there was something he said that the New York Times had lied about what he had said. I can't remember what the specific was. Well, the New York Times released the tape, and it turned out that the New York Times was telling the truth. I mean, if you can't even be picking one of the many examples where the New York Times is not telling the truth, that's a problem. But nobody seems to care. He just exists on this plane where it's very much about capturing the mood of the voters, and he has done that brilliantly. And even last night, one of the questions was about Nikki Haley saying that he was angry, and he said, you know, I could sit here and say I'm not angry, but the fact is I am angry. I'm angry about the direction of the country. That is pitch perfect for what voters want to hear, and I'll be interested to see if anyone can stop him. I think that at this point we just need to see how the voters are going to vote in Iowa and New Hampshire and get a little bit better handle on the reality of the situation.
And finally, you said at the very beginning it was a good debate. There have been some really bad ones this time around, but what made this one good?
Well, what's really interesting is that moderation matters a great deal, and Republican voters have complained for years about shoddy moderation. And this past year, there was that CNBC debate where the questions that the moderators asked showed very little other than their own liberal bias. And it was so bad that Republican candidates and voters said, this just cannot happen anymore. We want to hear from the candidates. We want them maybe to fight each other rather than fighting the moderators. Well, that's what we saw last night. They were fighting each other. They were really drilling down on some of their differences. They were showing differences in their style. And that's been true for the last couple of debates. So kudos to those moderators who have figured out that this should not be about them and their views, but just about facilitating conversations between the candidates.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor of The Federalist. She's author of a recent column titled Seven Takeaways from the First GOP Debate of 2016. Folks, be sure to sign up for The Federalist daily email update. Look for The Federalist under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and click subscribe. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. Ken Sherb joins us. It'll be part eight of our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation today, Luther's writings on good works and to the Christian nobility of the German nation.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.